Today I have Murray Cameron, who has come in. So, good morning, Murray.
Morning, Sam.
Murray, you have worked in fisheries in the Department for the Environment, and you've been involved for many years at local, regional, national, and international levels in promoting shifts towards better environmental management and more sustainable ways of living. In recent years, you've focused in particular on urban sustainability, and since last year, urban sustainability has moved to the forefront of policy agenda, with sustainable cities being a key theme of the government's Sustainable Development Program of Action. Yet, as recent media coverage says, Auckland region shows that solution continues to be elusive. Could you share with us some of your current thoughts about this subject?
Well, thanks, Tim. I think it's important to maintain a perspective which helps us to get insight into the changes that are taking place on the planet and how we're living at the moment. I think a good way of doing that is to acknowledge that we're really living in an urban age. The 21st century is going to be the first urban century of the planet's history. That has huge implications both for the planet as a whole, the environment, and society at large. The reason it's become an urban planet is not so much just population growth, it's population growth combined with wealth and the technology we have. We used to have large areas of wilderness and nature on the planet. The key thing that's really made a difference is that it's so much more accessible now. So most people do live in urban areas around the world, which are usually described as being sort of higher density and predominantly built-up areas. But because they're so mobile, they have ready access out into the countryside and into wilderness areas. So in effect, the whole planet is becoming their playground. The whole planet and the rural and natural areas is becoming the parks and reserves that we used to have in cities. And I think that really changes the whole way we have to think about the planet, the planetary environment, and how we live. I think although we're mostly living in cities and we're talking about managing our cities, managing our urban environments, we need to move beyond just providing open space and reserves within those built-up environments to actually realising that these urban areas that we live in are actually spreading quite phenomenally, and think about creating cities within parks rather than creating parks within cities. As I said before, in effect, the whole planet is a park which we use for our recreation. Increasingly, more people are going to the highest mountains and to the furthest reaches of wilderness, whether it's outer space, certainly down in Antarctica, and they're queuing up to do so. This is only going to increase in the future. So when I talk about building cities and parks, what that means to me is really getting a strong sense of the underlying ecological systems, and rather than superimposing the built environment on those and paving over a lot of it with asphalt and concrete, it's actually recognising a whole lot of those valuable services that ecosystems provide and living within those systems. And sure, we'll have lots of buildings, but living within those systems in ways which have less impact in terms of causing a deterioration in those systems and actually keeping those systems alive and healthy and making use of them in our lives. And those natural systems that are in and around our cities and towns that we live in, they contribute to many values which you lose when you pipe them or pave over them. These include things like water quality, maintaining water quality, access to the water resource for a range of activities that we we need to utilise them for, water recycling, energy conservation, energy generation, and cleaning the air with vegetation, also surrounding ourselves with high levels of biodiversity, interspersing agriculture through the areas that we live in. I think we're in this transition, really.
That's where how
we're,
I feel, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Where we're moving from seeing the world through a sort of dualism of urban areas and rural areas, and the rural areas are what had the farms, and beyond that, wilderness. With the technology and communication and mobility, all those wilderness and rural areas are so much more accessible, and so, in effect, like I said, they're in effect part of the extended network of urbanisation around the planet, and they're in effect large parks because we access them so frequently. So I think when we think of it that way, we start to plan for it in a different way. It's all very well to promote shifts to sustainable cities, and there are many initiatives around the world to do that. I think it's something that greater attention is being given to, but we have to be careful that in achieving sort of compact and contained cities, we don't lose sight of the need for open space, the need for open space for natural systems and biodiversity, and also the human needs. I think if we don't provide sufficient opportunities for people to enjoy themselves where they live, they're going to feel more compelled to get out of town, which is what we have been doing in the past.
Yes, well, I think a pleasurable walk and in the morning I think is lovely, and at night time, and you want to be able to feel the whiff of fragrances from trees there, and of course bird life. When you hear bird life, and Auckland's very good, really, and compared to many other cities, it makes your well-being, feeling well-being, become more at ease. And so I understand that.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's crucial that so many people actually end up driving somewhere so that they can go for a pleasant walk along beside a stream, along the coastal edge, through a park or a forest. And if we designed our cities and our communities better, we would be providing these facilities for people so that they could enjoy their lives more where they are. And I think this really gets down to the crux of it. You know, we talk about sustainability a lot, and that's very important. I think a lot of the attention, though, has focused on the sustainability of the natural environment. I think that we're in this transition stage of realising that in many ways we've mainstreamed a lot of environmental protection. Obviously, there's a lot more work we need to do in that area. But a limiting factor, which actually does affect the impacts we're having on the environment, is the livability of the environments that we live in. If we create environments that we live in which provide for people's needs more, for work, for recreation, for social activity, for lots of pleasurable activities, they will feel less compelled to go somewhere else to work and for recreation. And as I said, all too often we feel the need to get out of town, to get away from it all. If there's one thing that's really impressed itself upon me in recent years, it's the capacity of the environment and the built environments we create in urban areas, in cities, to bring joy to people, to create joyous experiences. You can see it in going from one town and city to another around the world. Some places are designed better, they feel better. You can see joy and happiness in people's faces. They love the places that they're in. If you make it hard for people to do that in one place, they are going to feel compelled to move. And in that movement, they create the need for more motorways, and they congestion and
fossil fuels. And yes,
Exactly. Yeah. This is not to say that obviously if you make a place very enjoyable that people can access most of their needs near where they live, that they're going to stop moving around. Of course they will continue to move around because they're interested in the wider world. But if they have to move to places, we're creating a system which is designed to cause problems. And those problems range right across the four well-beings. Certainly they create environmental problems, as you said. You get traffic congestion, air pollution, water pollution, coverage of large areas of ground with asphalt and tarmac, which could be used in other ways. I just find myself when I'm sort of thinking through how we're living and the quality of the environment, that it you follow through a lot of these streams of thought and it comes back to the livability of the environment, the quality of the environment that we're actually living in. And, you know, certainly in terms of the social and cultural ramifications and health, the way people treat each other, the way people feel about themselves. If they're living in an environment which contributes to feeling joyful, that has got to be a strong goal. And I think to do that, we need to give a lot more attention to detail. I think success in creating those environments does require great attention to detail.
Yes, well, I feel there, but of course, architecture is a very important one. If you've got buildings there which have beautiful symmetry, and you can see how they dovetail more with the environment. And I know if you go to Japan, they have a lot of sort of waterfalls, man-made waterfalls throughout the city. So that sound of water takes away the beeping of horns and car motors, etc. And I know if you've got bicycle lanes and areas there where kids can play, as well as just walk along the park. I mean, go to Albert Park in the middle of lunchtime here in Auckland and they'll use it. We're very fortunate. Exactly. We've got Myers Park. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see one of the areas right down on the wharves there. I think it's Queen's Wharves. Take those old buildings down there and just put a huge shrubbery right there of trees and etc. So people can walk right out there and feel part of nature. And I feel that Auckland, of course, is our major city, and I know that you've spent some time in Brisbane and I think also in Berlin, where you experienced the livability qualities of these places. How do you see Auckland fulfilling its role to become a more livable city in the future, or sustainable?
Well, I think we're making progress. We're heading in that direction. There's a greater acknowledgement of the need for creating more livable environments, but there is certainly a renaissance of regeneration and restoration that is happening in the world around cities where people are living. A great focus on the livability qualities, in particular establishing alternative transport networks to having to use cars, well-established public transport, greater facility for an encouragement for cycling and walking, walkways that are just so pleasant that people around the world are drawn to, as I said, sort of walking along streams and riverbanks and along coastal edges. And they've made great headway in a lot of cities in the world, and Brisbane and Berlin are great examples of that, where a lot of the restoration and regeneration has led to the establishment of forests within the city, very green cities, lots of walkways, lots of cycles and cycling activity, and these suburban centres that had become a bit sort of ordinary and tired and anywhere places have been regenerated to become magnificent works of art, which are wonderful places to be in, where that are absolute magnets for people, that creates so many spontaneous encounters between people and community pride. So there's just all these sort of spin-offs that create such a synergy of well-being when that attention is given. And I think in Auckland we're starting to do that, but it's interesting that it's been, I think it's really only since the late 90s, it's been recognised around the world that the livability of the place, the quality of the places that we live in, is actually a huge competitive and economic imperative. That in the 21st century, it's not places that attract the workers that stimulate the economy, it's actually the talented people, and the talented people are drawn to those places that have those livable qualities, and it's those talents that generate new business and create wealth. And so there's a huge competitive imperative that cities around the world are following to make their environments more livable, and there's some absolutely wonderful things happening. And I think there's certainly that recognition here, but it's an interesting one if you look at it from that perspective in terms of, well, how are we stacking up for being a livable environment that actually contributes to economic growth by attracting people? And I would say we're doing reasonably well, but it's sort of fairly mediocre compared with quite a few of our the cities that we're competing with that are doing better. And I mean, just in New Zealand, I think Christchurch and Wellington are acknowledged internationally as being more livable cities for a range of reasons: their public art, their quality of their architecture, the multi-modal transport systems, etc. So yeah, Auckland's got huge challenges and it's got a way to go to really catch up, I think.
Yeah, so you're saying in many ways it's a city that's got the best vibes because everybody's happy there. Mm. I remember you many years ago mentioned about how a cohesive town would come together, and the more people that were involved in many different hobbies and sporting events, etc. You'd find people who belonged to the stamp collecting group there, also part of the first aid group, and then there was the archery club, and there was the choral group, and there's the drumming people, and everyone sort of so connected to everybody else because they enjoyed doing many different hobbies and artistic and sporting things. Mm. That it made the whole society, or towns, I think, in around Italy in particular, they were quite cohesive.
Mm. Well, I think that a lot of that, a lot of it stems from the culture, but and how people live their lives, but also in many ways how the place that they're living in is designed. For example, if you're living in one place and you've got to go to school somewhere else and work somewhere else, and you have a range of other sort of educational, recreational activities that you partake in other places, and you have to drive between those places, that driving experience, it could be very special in many ways. It can isolate people from each other. Certainly in my experience, the communities that, you know, I guess it was an easy way of describing it, comparing one place with another, basically how they look, how they work, and how they feel. And that feeling of community cohesion and enjoyment of people in each other that you just see on the streets and that happens spontaneously happens in those places where people are on the streets and they do spontaneously bump into each other. And there's ways of designing places to make that more likely to happen. And that's both through architecture, like, for example, you can design buildings so that they block the outside out, so the outside people don't see what's happening inside, or you can design them so even within a complex itself you've got sight lines that you can make contact with people. Similarly in the streets, but they have to be attractive street environments too. If you want to go for a walk, and increasingly people do, but it's much more attractive to, as I said, go for a walk along sort of coastal and riverside walks that are away from traffic, rather than walking along even if it's a residential street, let alone a busy arterial, where there's a constant stream of traffic and the fumes and the noise. It's not that pleasant to walk. It's not that easy to engage with each other. If you did bump into somebody, you're not likely to start a conversation with them, because it's not a pleasant environment to do that in. I think I just get so fascinated with increasingly seeing the opportunities that design can provide in recreating the environments we live in a way that can enhance the well-being of individuals and communities. It was certainly, there's shifts in that direction here, but I guess it was a revelation for me when I went to Berlin recently and just saw the quality of the design and the effect it had on people and how they lived and worked.
Yes, well, I think there that I was up in China recently and some of the designs of the buildings just left us in New Zealand sort of scratching away in the Stone Age. Yeah. They were really wanting to push it. And, of course, the Chinese were so proud of their city. I went to one city, and they had a huge glass pyramid, and very much in the shape of the one at Teotihuacan in Mexico. And inside this glass pyramid, there they had a layout of the city in 3D. Mm. And they had a bridge right across it. So it was the size of an indoor basketball court. And it was all in 3D. And they had canals all running down the sides of the roads. They had parks. And all the Chinese people would go in there and they'd look at it and they'd say, that's where we're going. Mm-hmm. And they could actually see the whole thing. And when I looked at it, I was just blown away. I said, boy, they've got the jump on us. To lay this out, to give us an idea. And I feel that if we can instill in people the concept there that we are growing towards something that they can participate in. Mm. And then on the other side there, it's like getting neighbourhood support or neighbourhood watch groups, get all the streets organised to the degree there that where I used to live in St Mary's Bay, we used to have a street party every Christmas. And then at Guy Fawkes, they'd go into the square and they put a fire there so that everybody could come out and enjoy. So these occasions when people come out and have street parties, and I know the Greylin Festival is good, Pacifica, we need more of these. And I guess it's to integrate them. It's a great clean-up by Auckland ARC, isn't it?
The ARC.
ARC, that's right. Now, they've got a good program going on there that everybody can enjoy. And so I can see that there are many different groups wanting to become involved in something that is greater. And of course, with sustainable cities has been our imperative. I presume it just has to speed up.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, we were talking about Auckland and what we need to do here. Obviously, I think the foremost issue that we need to deal with here in terms of enhancing our livability and our relationship with the environment is certainly how we deal with traffic. The transport problems are huge. It's a significant challenge. And while some progress is being made, the problem is also getting worse. So the big question is whether we're doing enough to create a big enough change fast enough. We have needed to change direction, and we are shifting that direction at the moment. I think it's really important to try to implement best practice in achieving high quality living environments. There is a lot of progress being made around the world. We need to draw on that best practice. One of the things that really impressed me was how Europeans use the design of streets to manage traffic, but also the whole quality of the living environment in the streetscape, where in a street that is multimodal, people cycle, people walk, people drive. But there's a sort of balance of power there, and you feel it. I noticed it, say, crossing Simon Street. It's a very busy road. You are very vigilant and cautious when you have to walk across by yourself. When one or two other pedestrians comes along and there's a block of you moving over, you feel more relaxed and comfortable. There's a shift in power there. You become more visible. The drivers see you. They acknowledge you. They become more careful. Well, in Germany and some of the Scandinavian countries, I noticed that they were designing streets to create a more even balance of that sort of psychological power between cyclists, pedestrians and drivers, where there wasn't necessarily a rigid separation between the pedestrians and the drivers. It depended on the street. They were designed streets for different purposes. Some streets were mostly, if not, well, ranging from 100% for motor vehicles, high throughput thoroughfares, whereas others, they were more multimodal streets, and there was an even balance of power there. So that what happened was that the drivers became more careful and more vigilant. They didn't necessarily have a whole lot of road markings and signs to follow, but it was the combination of the width of the street, the landscaping, the street surface, some of them are cobblestoned, and just this whole combination of design influences made drivers more aware and more careful. It didn't necessarily slow them down. In some streets it was designed to make them slow down, but in others it didn't necessarily slow them down. But you saw that there was more actual eye contact and acknowledgement between the pedestrians, the cyclists, and the drivers. It was quite different than what I've experienced here, and it was just so palpably obvious. It was like there was these three different modes of transport, and there was this like conscious relationship. They were all communicating, if just with a gesture, and it was all very positive.
So belonging. They felt a belonging there, a sense of place.
Yeah,
I feel that's
It was like it was designed to integrate people, however they decided to move, and there was just a strong sense of cohesion there, those little experiences were like a confirmation of community that we're all in this together.
Validation.
There was no sort of resentment or anger that, ooh, you're taking up my street space, get away, you're getting in my way, you're causing congestion, etc. It was fantastic. So, there's these learning experiences that I think we can draw on more and certainly enhance the livability of the Auckland environment. And, I think we're making progress, but again, is it fast enough, both in terms of economic competitiveness and also environmental sustainability in terms of the way the region's grown?
Yes. Well, we're going to have to finish up in a moment, but can I ask just quickly, support, where is the support of these ideas coming from? Is there business, people, are they doing it? Is it coming from government? Or is it essentially we're seeing overseas there, but we've got to get onto this one quickly?
Yeah, I think there's a whole confluence of support starting to happen. I think certainly in the past 5 to 10 years, we've moved beyond the debate about livability and how much you need to enhance the public realm, and realise that it's actually hugely in the country's interest for right across those four well-beings. And certainly what brings all the players together is acknowledging that we as a nation, to thrive economically, need to create beautiful living environments. And the way that transport impacts on those environments is crucial. So, I think there is a widespread support for it. Of course, how fast you can go and what you can do depends on what you can afford. And I think we need to do the best we can within our means, and we can be informed by and inspired by places like Curitiba, which actually is a leading edge model of urban sustainability that had a very low tax base, and yet they tried very cost-effective ways of enhancing the public realm for the whole community and achieving better environmental sustainability at the same time.